Time for Vanessa and Gallant.
That sounds good. I'll have that.
Featuring Vanessa Richardson.
This is not a common opinion. This is not a popular opinion.
And Paul Gallant.
I think for the average person that sees me, they don't know that I'm a cat dad.
On ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Vanessa Richardson and Paul Gallant.
All right, we are rolling along on what I believe is a Wednesday. I've had a really, really hard time with days this week, and it doesn't make it any easier that the Astros are on the West Coast and the times are weird. We'll get to that in a second.
You know, what is up with this liberal BS where we're playing on the West Coast? Absolutely outrageous. 8:40 start times, Vanessa, come on.
It was really bad, and it was not a good game for the Astros. For the second day in a row, they fall to the Oakland Athletics. Luis was not bringing his best stuff. His command wasn't great. All in all, just not a great game for the Astros. The first game that they lost against Oakland, not worried about it. I'm still not worried about this team, but it is frustrating, and it will be frustrating that the Astros lose against good teams and then beat the Yankees.
One bad inning for Garcia, but you're right. The A's have won four of the last five against Houston. How? I don't know. Should I chalk it up to baseball being weird? I could. Instead, I'm just going to again point at the fact that these games that are being played on the West Coast should not be played at 8:40 when you're playing against a team with a payroll of $5. Literally, look it up on SpotTrack, Oakland A's payroll, $5. Four of it's going to that Pinder guy who hit the grand slam. I am factually accurate on this. My big belief is that if you're playing a team that is not trying to compete, then they should have to play on your terms, where they should have to play on your time. This game starts at 6:40. Everyone's in beddy by the right time, and they're feeling good, and they definitely win this game.
Here's my thing. Why inconvenience the entire country
for
one small segment of the country?
Exactly.
You are inconveniencing the South, the Midwest, the East Coast, the people in Florida who are kind of their own breed, so I don't put them in a category with anyone else. But you are inconveniencing the entire country for basically one or two states.
I have a question. 713-780-3776, 713-780-ESPN.
It's going to be the violent question you
ask. At Kalan says, at Sports Vanessa, no. I had a terrible violent statement before the show that I'm not going to reveal on the air. That is between friends. Is the worst part
We're friends.
About the Astros leaving the American League the late start times? Because I imagine back in the day it was, you don't have the Cardinals as a rival anymore. You don't have the history that you had being in the National League for as long as you did. And also, I would say right now, you don't exactly have any fun rivals in the AL West, given that the Rangers haven't been good.
I mean, it started at 8:40.
Right.
The postgame show was past midnight.
For those who are older than us, when the Astros were in the, I believe, National League West, when it was just two divisions in the National League, were there a lot of start times that were this late? Was it this many? It feels like there's a lot. And the good news is, and I saw this per our guy, Ben DeBose, I think late last night, this past game was the last time that the Astros have to play on some ridiculous West Coast time.
As it should be.
Thank God.
Yeah, that was brutal. If you're to the point where you can't stay up, and I'm a night owl, if I'm having a hard time staying up for the postgame show, you know that it is too late.
Do you watch the whole postgame show?
I did not watch. No, I fell asleep.
Do you generally watch the whole postgame show?
Yes.
Okay, good for you.
But not last night. Not when it's an 8:40 start time. The good news, guys, today it's like 2:30. Mm-hmm. So it's a lot better, more conducive to a normal schedule. But the Astros taking on the Oakland A's today. Hopefully they can get a win. A's already won the series, but losing three in a row to the A's is not enticing.
No, it's not. It's annoying, but whatever. I mean, look, you did what you needed to do in the important games. And, yeah, you're one of those teams that at this point in time, at least against the Oakland A's, you just don't care.
When you have Tony Kemp games. And Chad Pinder and some of those guys that look really good against the Astros, is that, you think, because they're kind of trying to beef up their stock for a possible trade?
Maybe.
I mean, because like...
Well, everyone wants to get out of Oakland. I mean, I'm trying to think, what's the worst part about being in Oakland? You're not getting paid a whole lot. That stadium is falling apart. I think that there's constant sewage leaks into their dugout. I'm not even kidding on that front. You, of course, have the cats, which is, you know, the best part of being in Oakland A's. There's wild cats all over the ballpark, but I'm sure that there's rats, probably some bats.
Oh, God.
You know, it's like a poor man's Astrodome, right? Less asbestos.
I could absolutely never. I don't do rats. Kyle Tucker? Nope. Absolutely
not. Who does do rats?
I mean, they terrify me.
Terrify?
Yes.
Have you ever actually interacted with a rat?
Yes. In New York City, it was terrible.
Oh, in New York City, I mean, they keep to themselves. Ugh. You know, they're polite.
Kyle Tucker hit his 19th home run for the Astros. Yordan Alvarez added 2 hits. There were some positives in the game last night, but overall, just not a good night for the Astros over on the West Coast.
It's 2 games in a row where they got off to slow starts and they weren't able to get all the way back in. Now, they did make a noble effort. It was a noble defeat to the worst team in the American League.
No update on the injury front for Michael Brantley or Lance McCullers Jr., unless I missed something, but I did some research, did not hear anything mentioned in the media availability about either one of those guys.
Nope, I didn't either. And, I mean, it was once again a reminder that they're going to need to do something at the trade deadline, but at the very least, it does seem, based off of reports by Ken Rosenthal, based off of reports by Buster Olney, I believe, as well, that they are very active as far as communications they've been having with other teams about potentially making a deal at the trade deadline. And we all think it's likely going to be a first baseman of some sort. Who? We don't know. Josh Bell's been rumored, of course. And it could potentially be a left-handed reliever. Maybe there's something else that they do that surprises us.
Michael Schwab put on Twitter and screenshotted an article from, I believe, the Houston Chronicle.
And I don't pay $20 for to get through a paywall to read that
anymore.
No,
not happening.
I used to pay 99 cents for it, but then they raised my rate, and I was like, what? No, $20 a month? What is this, Disney Plus Plus?
James Click said, there's always areas we can improve. If you're sitting there and saying you're comfortable with your lineup, then I don't think you're doing your job. Our job is constantly to look for ways to improve this team and get them what they need in order to succeed. It's not a situation where you're ever sitting back and saying you're comfortable with things. A very generic general manager answer, but you do hope the Astros are looking at some of those positions of need.
Oh, they definitely have to be. I mean, I think they are starting to realize that, okay, this run's been incredible. 5 straight American League Championship Series, but you don't take it for granted. And so at some point, they're going to have to do something bold. Yesterday, we were throwing out, like, who's the best Astro that you would consider trading? You're not doing that, but you do need to do something right now that could potentially, I guess, shorten the proverbial window that you have to be the most dominant team in baseball.
All right, Texans training camp has already begun. The veterans reported, the rookies reported. We will have media availability with players and coaches on Friday, I believe. Exciting stuff. Look, the Texans in a new mindset. Davis Mills, second year. He has some new weapons. They had some good draft picks. Obviously, you know, unfortunately, we're not going to see a lot of John Mechie the third. But looking forward to Stingley Jr., what he can do.
I hope we see him out there.
Yeah, me
you
too.
Know, it's
me
right too. Now with Mechie and with Derek Stingley Jr., you know, you want to be excited about fresh, young faces on this team, new players, but, all right, if you're not going to see them at training camp, you're not going to see them in the preseason, and they're potentially, you know, working behind everybody else on the roster because they're rehabbing injuries off on side fields, that does make it a little bit of a bummer, because I think one of the cool things, at least going into this year, at least in the immediacy after the NFL draft, Vanessa, was that finally there is somebody that seems like they have potential on this team that is not named Brandon Cooks.
A good point.
And Davis Mills, I guess, if you really want to get excited about Davis Mills.
And there's nothing wrong with admitting that, although, you know, thoughts and prayers and the first priority is John Mechie the Third's health, it is, from a football perspective, also a bummer because you want, like you said, an addition to that young core.
You want fresh faces. You want to feel like you're going somewhere. And, I mean, that's the most exciting thing about the NFL draft. I mean, I'm sure in the movie Draft Day, when they draft Vontae Mack and the guy that Arian Foster was playing.
Right,
yeah.
Kind of hot.
Yeah, and, you know, they all come out of the tunnel, and they're so excited about the future of the Cleveland Browns. But we all know what was going to happen after that. The Browns were going to go faceplant, and then Sonny, played by Kevin Costner, was going to get his ass canned and probably, you know, charged with an illegal workplace relationship with Jennifer Garner.
Kevin Costner, hot for an old guy. Howie Long, hot for an old guy.
Jennifer Garner, hot for an old lass.
She is in her, like, 40s.
But you can't call a lady old, can you? You're right.
No, but she's in her 40s. She's not old.
You're right on
that. Honey, you're 33.
Wow.
You better not be calling a woman in her 40s old.
Okay, listen. I'm just trying to go keep
with
the theme.
She's age-appropriate for you,
yeah,
Paul.
Yeah, she is age-appropriate.
What does that even mean?
Stacey's mom has got it going on. It means
because
she's...
Kevin Costner... So, Vanessa's 27.
Kevin Costner is 45,
and,
right.
And Kevin Costner, yes.
How old is Kevin Costner, actually?
I think he's like 60.
Yeah,
oh, geez, really?
Kevin Costner is 67.
And okay, Howie Long has
Long
two sons that are retired from the NFL.
Okay, listen, I'm...
So, they are not age-appropriate
for me. I'm committing seppuku. I am out on this take. I'm dead, okay? I get it, okay? I did not mean to say Jennifer Garner old. Now, that said, she was once mean to my buddy Mike Meltzer in the middle of a Radio Row interview.
I don't believe that.
Okay, then never mind.
I don't believe that.
Oh, it's accurate.
I don't believe that. She's an angel.
And Mike is a stand-up guy, but I saw it, I listened to it, and I was like, that is messed up, Jennifer Garner. I'm sorry we don't want to ask you all about the movie Draft Day during an interview. Jesus.
Do you want to know, here's the thing. I'm wondering why Ben Affleck, A, never gave me a chance, and two, why Capital One still has her doing endorsements when I have a Capital One card. I use the hell out of it, and I get a lot of points. I would be better than Jennifer Garner.
Well, all you have to do, can you say it? Can you say it like she does?
Capital One Venture Rewards card. What's in your wallet?
That's not bad.
Yeah, thank you.
I generally do a cartoonish version of it. What's in your wallet?
Because
whenever
like
I hear it, I get really annoyed.
It doesn't sound like that at all.
That's Gilbert Gottfried.
Yeah.
R.I.P.
Yeah, we're looking forward to Texans training camp coming up on Vanessa and Gallant. I spoke with Mike Sando from The Athletic on those controversial tiers and also asked him what folks around the league are saying about Davis Mills. That's coming up next.
ESPN 97.5. Listening to Vanessa and Gallant on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Vanessa Richardson and Paul Gallant.
It's okay. You can wear a schmedium because
it's not a schmedium.
A schmedium just means a medium that inches on the smaller side that's a little tight on the person that's wearing
it. It's supposed to be tight. That's in.
That's it.
It should be a compliment.
It's not like it's so tight that you can see. Every single detail of my very tiny nipples. It's not like that. You can't see that.
It just hugs your frame. I would say.
Yeah, it hugs it. But it, you know, it's not one of the.
Am I supposed to get a baggy large?
You don't look
like
a douchebag. It's just a schmedium. Like when I wear a tank
top
that clearly shows my ladies. It's a schmedium tank top.
The ladies. Ooh.
You know?
Okay.
See, I don't get offended.
Yeah, but I mean, it's a medium. It's like closer to a large than it is a medium.
Are you calling me fat?
No, I'm talking about me. I'm only talking about me ever because I live in my own world.
It's a medium. It's like inches more towards a small.
It is a medium.
Medium is not defined by if it's actually a small or a medium. It's defined by how it fits your body.
It means that it's a medium that fits like a small.
Right. Have you seen my pecs? We are trending towards large. We are not trending towards small.
So you have a problem with the small part.
Yes.
Oh,
I've had an inferiority complex all my life. Hey, Paul, you're the smallest kid on the football team. We're not going to put you in even though you're faster than everybody.
Inferiority? You grew up a Patriots fan. Yeah. That's the most entitled group of people.
That doesn't mean that I didn't feel that way about myself.
So at the All-District Awards, were you like Michael Jordan when he went to the Hall of Fame, pointing out people that doubted you
all
along the way?
Leading the conference in recovered fumbles. Let's go.
Mike Sando of The Athletic released his quarterback tiers. A lot of guys that wear large and XLs on that. No schmediums on that list. And he had a couple of different things that stood out to us. We read those tiers on the show yesterday.
Yes, we did.
Told us whether you agreed, didn't agree. If you're not familiar, the tiers are gathered by sources that he uses, coaches, GMs, etc. So I asked Mike Sando yesterday. He wasn't available to come on our show live, but I did do an interview with him and asked him about Davis Mills in particular. What was kind of the consensus around the league on the Texans QB?
People want to see a little more. Now, some of the context of that is that he was not the number one overall pick, right? Like Trevor Lawrence gets held to a higher standard. People were kind of like, yeah, he was fine, but, you know, I was kind of expecting more, right? So with Davis Mills, people weren't expecting as much. They thought he was very competent. They're intrigued. They think Houston might have something. They're not sure. And, you know, some people aren't. At this stage, this early stage, you know, the draft eval still holds for a lot of people. Like, you're not going to totally change someone's mind who might have didn't think he could play or something. But I think he made real headway and gives them at least somebody they could consider. Pending what happens this year.
Wanting to see more is, I think, the exact way that you should be talking about Davis Mills. And I don't think that you should put projections on him. I think that's unfair, isn't it? I mean, shoot, one of the guys that we thought could potentially be one of his new toys this year, Vanessa, John Metchie, is out for the year already. We're wondering, is Nico Collins going to take a step forward? Is Brandon Cook still going to be the same player? Is there somebody else that we're not thinking of that's going to help him out? I think that's an appropriate way to look at it. I do think it's interesting to note that he was pretty high up as far as first-year quarterbacks in last year's draft class, which has been largely disappointing to this point, outside of, you know, Mac Jones the first two-thirds of the season.
There are two words that stood out to me when I asked him about this: competent and intrigued. Okay, competent isn't like he's the next Tom Brady or whatever, but competent is, look, we didn't see a lot of him at Stanford because he only had so many starts. We didn't see a lot of him under center because of the situation with Tyrod Taylor, and then was it going to be Deshaun Watson, whatever. But once he got in there, he looked like he could run a team, run a playbook. He's competent. And then intrigued. It kind of goes back to what you said. Nobody knows for sure, but it's not like you saw him and you thought, man, he was a disappointment. I also like that he brought up Trevor Lawrence. Because he, you know, Davis Mills wasn't the first overall draft pick, there isn't this sky-high expectation. So I thought that that was an interesting answer from Mike Sando. Davis Mills was tier three, I believe, yesterday. So interesting to hear from him on the Davis Mills front. Now, the Mike Sando clip that really caught a lot of attention, the article from his athletic tier, was Lamar Jackson.
Right. There was an anonymous defensive coordinator.
And a current defensive coordinator.
Check that.
Which I think is very noteworthy.
An anonymous current defensive coordinator said that even if Lamar Jackson wins 12 MVPs, he would never put Jackson on the top tier, and then criticized his actual game.
Now, we do love some hyperbole on the show, and we are assuming that this defensive coordinator was talking in hyperbole, but still, it went viral. It led to a lot of his Ravens teammates standing up for him. Here's Mike Sando about that process and how he got that answer.
You know, what's so funny about that is, like, the item on Lamar Jackson there is genuinely positive. He rose in his average grade rose from last year. But what was taken out of there was one line out of a big paragraph of a broader comment to make it sound like, I don't care what he does, he can't be tier one. And so that's what the reaction is to, but that's really not what it says at all. I think people in the league agree on what he is. They have a healthy respect for his game. They think he's obviously an elite runner and playmaker. He's a great leader. He's a great worker. But he's an average passer. And he's also in an offense that you could talk about or question whether it's set up to even be a good pass offense. So when you talk about him in relation to tier one, that is the hurdle that not everyone's willing to put him over, because they feel like when you do get into the playoffs and you do play against good defenses that can game plan your not gimmicky offense but unconventional offense, and it comes down to you having to throw the ball, which we've seen a couple times in the playoffs, it didn't look great. You know, people aren't convinced that he has that pure pass component good enough to go into tier one. So that's what a defensive coordinator, when he says, when he says, I don't care if he wins MVP 12 times, he's not going to be tier one. That's because the tier one component requires the pure passing component. So that's all that is. That's all that is. It's not saying you can't win with Lamar Jackson because they've won 80% of their games. I mean, most of the teams in the league would like to have Lamar Jackson as their quarterback. He's excellent. He's going to get paid. He's going to earn it. He's been the MVP. But there's nuance in there that obviously social media is not great for nuance. But I'm glad people are talking about it. I mean, I think we have overall gotten smarter, more nuanced in how we talk about quarterbacks, for sure.
Someone remind me not to laugh during interviews. God, there's nothing worse than hearing your own laugh.
I like the laugh. I like the laugh. I also like the audio quality of this. And good job, Vanessa, doing this on your own time, getting Mike Sando aboard. I like that he provided a little bit of context there. And the key thing when you're listening to him along the way is saying Jackson is average as a passer. He's not bad as a passer. But if you read that piece right after that anonymous scout, and I did a little piece on this for my Twitch show, twitch.tv/Galan Says, yesterday afternoon. Right afterwards, they outline his statistics in comparison to the other tier one quarterbacks' statistics in the playoffs. People, though, got so bleeping sensitive about that one anonymous scout. And if you take away the hyperbole, you take away him saying, talking about if he won 12 MVPs in a row, those criticisms are all founded. I heard Ryan Clark getting upset about it. I heard
Lewis, he was heated.
Right. And Lewis Riddick, too, was saying the same thing, which is funny because if you go back to right in the wake of Bill Polian cleaning up his mess of saying that Lamar Jackson should try to move to wide receiver at the NFL Combine, Riddick, nodding while agreeing with Polian's reservations about Jackson as a quarterback, said right afterwards in 2018 on March 2nd, hey,
he needs to be better than just a runner. And I think it's funny to see him so outraged 4 years later when you're talking about the exact same problem for Lamar Jackson at this point in time. It's that as a passer, he leaves some to be desired. That's not calling him a bad player. Yes, there's an anonymous defensive coordinator who's speaking in hyperbole. Should we get so mad about it? And I do think that some of this is rooted in race, because someone responded to a clip that I put up of that segment yesterday saying, you, Cracker, would say Daniel Jones is an elite pocket quarterback with Lamar Jackson's numbers, if he had those. No, I wouldn't at any point, because we all know what Lamar Jackson is. And then this person said it again, Justin Herbert didn't make the playoffs. Why is he in tier one? Why don't you just call Lamar an N-word? This person tweeted this to me.
It's very aggressive.
People bring it to race often when they're defending Lamar Jackson.
Right.
And look, I understand maybe that mentality.
Yeah,
of,
maybe there's a component there.
Yeah, I get that. Maybe you feel like he is getting criticism that other white quarterbacks aren't getting. And maybe that is actually accurate. But let's just, instead of thinking about the whataboutisms, just think about the issues with Lamar Jackson's game. He could be better as a passer. Simple. That's it. And a lot of defensive coordinators across the league feel that way. Wait a second. We should just discount this guy's opinion because it's something that a bunch of players don't like?
And he's a current defensive coordinator.
Yeah, exactly.
So and this is the thing that stood out to me, too, is when Mike Sando was like, by and large, it was a positive review. Right after he mentions the defensive coordinator, he quotes an offensive coach who says, quote, I think what we saw with Lamar starting with the Miami game and carrying through the rest of the season was someone who did struggle to identify coverages and make pre-snap reads. He is still a really dynamic player. He brings something different to the group, but by and large is going to have to continue to improve as a passer in order to go deep in playoffs and put himself in the tier one group. I think that's like objectively correct. He is probably going to have to improve a little bit as a passer.
He definitely does, yes.
He is going to have to get, and they're going to have to pay at some point, a high-level wide receiver. We haven't gotten to see the full, you know, effects of this team because of all of the injuries and the COVID issues they had over the past couple years. But I think that this is something that's very fair.
They need Rashad Bateman to take a massive step in year number two. They need Jackson to continue to improve as a passer. But they also need Greg Roman to get more out of Lamar Jackson as opposed to this shelf life that we've seen multiple times where he has a mobile quarterback and he doesn't really help that guy, let's just say, not adapt his game, just improve his game. He doesn't develop. Just Greg Roman is not a develop-friendly offensive coordinator.
Lamar's a great football player. He's going to continue to be a football player. Not having a passing game is his Achilles heel. I think everybody knows that. But
he's not even like he's bad. He's not Tim Tebow.
Right.
He's just not great.
We'll see what he can do this year and if they will add any weapons at any point. Coming up on Vanessa and Gallant, we continue our NFL conversation. Tom Brady's new weapon and the 49ers are officially moving on. That's coming up next. But first, Paul is going to tell you about his friends at PIN.
The Passive Investor Network, baby. Look, we all are looking to make money. And one of the best ways that you can make money these days is through real estate, right? I mean, all those prices are going up and up and up. So why not get a little piece of that? You can do that through the Passive Investor Network. These guys are your go-to team when it comes to real estate investment. They take all the hassle and worry out of your hands. They're going to sit down with you when you go on one of their bus tours, passiveinvestor.net. Enter promo code ESPN. You'll go on that bus tour for free and see what they're all about. They sit down with you and personalize a five-year plan for you. And you might be thinking to yourself, I don't know. I don't know if I have the money right now to make something like this happen. That's why you got to sit down with them and talk with them. They will come up with a realistic plan for you. So again, you can get in on this and make some real money down the road for you and your family. It's the Passive Investor Network. They scout around Houston. They look for parts of town that are going to be on the come up in the near future. And they invest and they rebuild and they make those things look beautiful. The Passive Investor Network, passiveinvestor.net. Promo code ESPN to go on the next bus tour. It's the Passive Investor Network.
ESPN 97.5.
We're ready for some football, baby.
The countdown to the NFL season continues with Vanessa and Gallant.
43 is the number of days until the regular season kicks off for the National Football League. And as every day, our jersey correspondent, Paul Gallant, picks the jersey number in accordance with that day. Paul, who is your number 43?
I got a couple. I love this guy, even though he was a Pittsburgh Steeler, because he was just completely instinct-driven. Safety Troy Polamalu, number 43 for the Pittsburgh Steelers, an NFL Hall of Famer.
He has dandruff, but yeah, it's
Also, yes, Head and Shoulders ads as well. And on top of that, this is the one that I think some of my homies in New Orleans, I am wearing a Louisiana shirt today, will appreciate. Darren Sproles.
Oh, there you go. That's a good one.
Sproles was a damn good player despite being such a small running back. And I remember when he first came out of Kansas State, I used to get every single video game of NCAA football and every single video game version of Madden. And I remember I would always go out of my way to make sure that in the first year of my Madden franchise, when I was importing an NCAA football draft class, that I would draft Darren Sproles as early as I possibly could. Darren Sproles, everybody. Madden legend with Paul Gallant.
Number 43, baby. All right, 43 days, of course. We're going to have training camp coverage starting this Friday. Nick Caserio will be talking to the media bright and early in the morning, as will Lovie Smith, so we're excited for that. And we will be out there bringing you all the hashtag content. A lot of content in Tampa Bay as Brady, of course, unretired, and now it will be him and Julio.
This is hilarious.
Julio Jones has signed a one-year deal with the Bucs. That was official as of this morning. But which Julio Jones are we getting? Are we getting Atlanta Julio Jones? Are we getting Tennessee Julio Jones?
I think we're getting Tennessee.
Are we getting Julio Jones from the song Me and Julio Down by the Schoolyard? I don't know.
Who is Julio from the song Julio
Down
by the Schoolyard?
I think that's Simon and Garfunkel, isn't it?
Oh, wow.
Me.
Singing about Julio at a schoolyard. Anyway, to go back to this.
Yes, Paul Simon. Nailed it.
Julio Jones is not the same player he used to be. His career fell off a cliff pretty quickly. Lots of injuries. I remember last offseason, people in Seattle were really pissed off that the Seahawks didn't sign him. And I was thinking to myself, look, guy's available for a reason.
Right.
And he goes in there, and look, I know he's working with Ryan Tannehill, but, I mean, he was a shell of himself. 31 catches, 434 yards and a touchdown in 10 games. He hasn't been to a Pro Bowl since 2019. It's been a while since Julio Jones was an all-pro wide receiver. It's been a while. Is Tom Brady going to be able to resurrect his career? I believe that Tom Brady is divine. Even I don't think that is possible. I also feel bad for Falcons fans, Vanessa. I mean, Falcons fans, not only did they see, you know, Tom Brady in Super Bowl, 51.
And then Matt Ryan leaves.
With the dramatic comeback down 28-3, where Julio Jones makes a reception and the game should have been over after he makes that catch. Now, Julio Jones is not only playing for the division rival Tampa Bay Buccaneers, he is also playing with Tom Brady. So if he has a renaissance this season playing with Brady, Falcons fans are going to want to throw themselves out windows.
I think Mike Tannenbaum had a good point on ESPN this morning. He said, you don't necessarily need Julio Jones for every game. You just need him for a few until Chris Godwin is healthy. And then eventually, a lot of people in the league are saying Gronk could come back. So if they do a little load management, and if he can get back in shape, maybe Tom Brady can help resurrect him. This is my hot take. For a few games, I don't think Julio can be resurrected completely. R.I.P.
As a number four wide receiver, because if you look at their depth chart,
right.
I mean, it's Mike Evans at the top.
Yeah.
You mentioned Chris Godwin. They also have Russell Gage, who is probably a number two wide receiver on a team that doesn't have Chris Godwin as the number two wide receiver.
Totally.
And then on top of that, they have Julio Jones now. And by the way, Breshad Perriman's a former first-round pick, for what it's worth.
They don't need him to be vintage Julio Jones every game. But if he can have a couple of games where he stands out, maybe Brady can resurrect him a little bit. All right, we all have to move on in life sometimes, guys, and that is what the 49ers have done with one Jimmy Garoppolo. Let's hear what Mike Shanahan and the boys had to say about Jimmy Garoppolo's status in regards to Trey Lance and that quarterback competition.
You know, Jimmy understands where we're at. We understand where we're at. Like, I can't tell you how appreciative I have been of Jimmy and him being here, and so appreciative of what he did for us last year. I think Jimmy and we knew what move we made the year before on that. Jimmy did a hell of a job coming to camp and winning that job and taking us real close to the Super Bowl. But we have moved on to Trey. We're starting camp out this way. We think Jimmy would have been traded if the surgery didn't happen. And it did. He needed to do it. So there's no ill will there at all. But it's good to see that he is healthy. But now it's all just seeing how this will end up.
While we're on that Mike Sando piece,
nice
which
guy.
We discussed a little bit earlier, and of course Vanessa spoke with, about the Jimmy G potential move elsewhere from San Francisco, that would be like my early Christmas present if they just get rid of Jimmy so that way he can't play for them and then make Trey be your guy. That coach, a head coach who will play the 49ers this year, that was his thought on the idea of one play Trey. Is it Emmanuel Acho in disguise as one of those coaches? I can't say.
Is he the source? Interesting notes about the 49ers staff in general. The quarterback coach is Brian Greasy. I had forgotten about this until this was brought up on national television.
Underwhelming in a ESPN it's Monday Night Football
not
broadcast.
Only extremely underwhelming as a hire in general, but if you're having somebody work with Trey Lance, don't you want like a quarterback whisperer? So I don't think this is a good move that they're not letting there be a competition at all.
Well, he's played the position before.
I also... Yeah, he played two games. Good job. Thanks, Paul.
Greasy.
I'm just saying I think it's an underwhelming hire to have somebody working with Trey Lance. I'd like to see somebody that didn't spend the last couple of years as a mediocre, no offense, Brian, announcer on ESPN. So I think it's an interesting choice.
He's a Michigan man, though.
Not to have a quarterback competition in general.
Brian Greasy is one of many random Michigan quarterbacks around the same time of Tom Brady.
Very random.
Drew Hansen.
Is he a little older or a little younger?
I think he's a little older.
A little older,
I want to. I think Brian Greasy was like, I think that Brady was Greasy's backup for a couple of years.
Yeah.
I could be wrong on that one, though.
All right, Leonard Fournette, at least he has a sense of humor about the fact that he is thick, T-H-I-C-C. He reported to camp at 245 instead of 260. He's listed as 228 on the team website. His trainer says that he's used time in the sauna to drop weight. Reminds me of a great Seinfeld episode. It's like a sauna in here, said Kramer. What's the craziest thing that you've done to lose weight?
Wow. This is tough. I mean, every single time that I feel like I have a beach / pool destination.
Brunch.
Generally, that week, I will, like, work out twice a day sometimes.
That's not crazy.
And... I think it is when you're going
working out
like,
twice a day
for 2.5 hours each. Yes, that's
a long time.
That's a little much when you're not.
Yeah, that's true.
When you're not an
all district safety.
One of my friends, he just doesn't eat. He just won't eat for like 4 days. And I mean, like, I guess it helps him out.
Yeah, but you're not actually burning fat. You're just losing water weight.
Your body is just eating itself.
Craziest thing you've done to lose weight, Sean?
I haven't done anything really that crazy to lose weight. I mean, I played around with intermittent fasting.
Yeah.
That's about it.
Oh. Yeah.
Like,
that work?
Looking at your watch, or looking at a clock on my phone to see, like, can I eat right now?
Right.
No, I still have 3 more hours. So that's about it, is, like, intermittent fasting. But I don't even think it's hard.
It's not that hard.
It's just something that, like, when you, like, catch yourself in the mirror and you feel bad, you're you know what? I'm just going to intermittent fast. And you eat it's the same diet. You just eat, like, at weird times.
Intermittent fasters, though, love to tell you that they're intermittent
fasting.
Oh, they
are obsessed. Those in keto. People on keto never stop.
I've heard so much about keto, and I have no idea what it is.
Right. I'm in ketosis. Oh,
right.
are
no,
you?
No, you're not. That's not how
you
it
don't
works.
Look that way.
Right.
But I'm in ketosis. Don't trust me. It's working.
Yeah. They're obsessed. The craziest thing I've ever done.
Someone texted in cocaine. No, that's illegal.
I've actually never done cocaine. I did the pills that are supposed to make you... laxatives.
Ooh.
I did a lot of things.
Skinny buddy tea.
If you're listening and you have a teenage daughter, the things that you do not want your teenage daughter to do.
Ooh.
I was very skinny for a while in college.
A little puking.
So mine are probably a lot crazier than both of yours, but such is the life of being a woman. Just call me Brooke Shields. All right, coming up on Vanessa and Gaunt.
Atkins diet.
Sensitive Derek Carr. This is not something new, but this
cigarettes.
Is a great soundbite.
Adderall. Yeah.
Didn't do Adderall.
These are just people texting these things.
Oh, the things that other people have done.
Yes.
Adderall, I've heard, actually works. Cigarettes, I think, would make me sick.
I wouldn't know because I've never taken any drug in my life.
A lot of vomiting. All right, Derek Carr, sensitive. You got to hear this soundbite and this interaction with the reporter coming up next.
Going to answer that?
To call into the HRNP listener line, dial 713-780-ESPN. The Affordable Care Act continues to be a complex regulation, and employers must comply. Visit HRP.net for help. Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's Vanessa and Gallant. On ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
So many NFL storylines from yesterday. We've told you about a lot of them. We'll get to Derek Carr in a minute. Let's start with a little KPJ news. We do want to talk the Houston Rockets. KPJ and the Rockets have mutual interest in a contract extension. before the start of the 2022-23 season, sources tell Shams.
I do not understand this for the life of me.
I thought he was unhappy. Did I miss something?
Maybe he is happier now that there are better players on the team, Vanessa.
I mean, I guess.
I guess as well. I mean, he's certainly got to be happy about the fact that, I mean, he quit on the team in the middle of a game right after New Year's and that they didn't cut him or try to trade him. This is a guy that you don't want around Jalen Green based off of just that. I just don't.
Is
I don't,
he toxic?
Toxic is an extreme word because he's a young guy, and I'm sure he's learning his way through the NBA. So
I joke. He's also had some mental health issues, so not laughing.
I want to be somewhat fair here. I just don't think that his play is compatible. I don't know what he is. When he's out there, I feel like he's the kind of player that wants everything to go through him. And I'm sorry, no, it goes through Jalen Green on this team. It should go through Jalen Green on this team. Green has more potential. And it's nothing against Kevin Porter Jr., who's younger. I just feel like if you're Raphael Stone and you're giving this guy an extension or something like that, I mean, what's the point of Steven Silas? I don't know. I feel like you're just saying, yeah, you can kind of do whatever you want with Steven Silas as the head coach.
I mean, he's done it. And listen, I like Raphael Stone. I have met his wife at a steakhouse. She is lovely as well. But he is a very, like, you always hear about players' coaches. Am I wrong to say that he's kind of like a player's GM?
They are very pushover-ish. They have been since the James Harden saga where they traded him to the team that he wanted to go to, and they really caved pretty quickly when it came to that. And I just don't feel like Kevin Porter Jr. is going to help you get the most out of Jalen Green. I think he stands in the way of Green's development. I don't think that they're compatible to play with each other. I think Kevin Porter Jr. is a guy who's going to average 24 points a game for a team that's going to be drafting in the lottery.
Porter averaged 15.6 points, 6.2 assists, 4.4 rebounds. This is all in Shams' article. But there's really not a lot of information. This seems like kind of a preliminary thing because I feel like if it was big, there'd be a huge write-up. This is just a quote-unquote nugget. But we'll see what happens. I agree with you. All paths must go through Jalen Green.
He moved on from Christian Wood. On from Kevin Porter Jr. You have three guys that you should be building around in Sengun, Green, and now, of course, with Jabari Smith Jr.
All paths for the Raiders go through Derek Carr, who it was rumored could be traded, and then they brought in his college BFF, Devontae Adams. They struck a deal. Here's the thing. The Raiders are my dark horse, could be a success story. We'll see what happens. And I really, really want to like Derek Carr. My issue with Derek Carr is that he always does the whole everybody's out to get us and nobody believes in us, when in fact most of the networks and talking heads actually do believe in Derek Carr and Devontae Adams. This is Derek Carr's interaction with Paul Gutierrez, a local reporter there in Vegas.
The expectation, all that kind of stuff, who says that? Honestly, it doesn't matter. It really doesn't. Whether they don't say anything or they say a lot, nobody cares. Hopefully they talk about us at the end. You know what I mean? Like, but right now, that crap don't matter.
Doesn't matter, Derek. Why do you talk about it? Why do you?
Thank you, Paul. It's so good to see you. I say it because I'm a positive person, and I try and it is, and I try and encourage my teammates. There's a way that I say things to encourage my locker room, to maybe put a chip on their shoulder, and sometimes I do it too much, and so I don't appreciate your tone either. You can pump that back a little bit.
Who does he think he is to talk to a reporter like that?
Who does he think he is speaking with a Southern accent when he was born in Bakersfield, California? I get it. He lived in Sugar Land when David Carr, his older brother, got drafted by the Texans and that he was at Clements High School for a bit. Did you develop a Southern accent while living in the suburbs of Houston? I find that highly improbable. Maybe another part of Texas, maybe in the suburbs of Dallas, I could see something like that happening. Absolutely bleeping not here. So that's the first part that really rubbed me the wrong way. And second, he just consistently is sensitive. You either don't care or you do. You just said you don't care.
Right.
This guy pushes back and asks, I think, the easiest, perfect follow-up question. Oh, well, you're here. I don't like your tone.
Right.
Walk that back a little bit. Derek, like, you're walking in to the thing that everyone criticizes you for. By the way, he is very block heavy on Twitter. Has not blocked me, but has blocked many people on Twitter. I remember this because I was listening to an episode of the Around the NFL podcast, and those guys found out that they had been blocked by Derek Carr. They brought Derek Carr on the show to mend fences. I am sure that Carr has probably blocked them again, because guess what? Carr is like a less talked about Kirk Cousins. He's like very good quarterback, but when has he ever done the thing that you want him to do in the big moment? I'll give him a lot of credit because last year it really did feel like he took a big step forward in a season where the Raiders lost their head coach in John Gruden, had a first-round pick in Henry Ruggs go to jail for vehicular manslaughter DUI. You had a lot of things go down last season, and he was able to keep things together. But he's talking about my locker room. We don't care about any of this noise. Then just don't engage the question. Don't engage Paul Gutierrez, the ESPN reporter, because you're giving people like me and anybody else who thinks you're a little sensey all the ammunition they need to continue to pound on you.
Here's my whole thing. If you're sensitive and if you're known for that, own it. And that's a hard thing to own, but he could at least make fun of himself in a self-deprecating way and be like, you know what? I'm not going to lie. Over the years, guys, I've gotten a little worked up. It's what I'm known for, blah, blah, blah. But he doesn't own it. Instead, he denies, like you said, the thing of which he's known for, which is ridiculous.
He's not self-aware.
Is he, though? Like, you have to think that at some point he's going to understand that he is so sensitive.
Who's going to tell him that, though?
Nobody. He probably surrounds himself with yes men.
Paul Gutierrez.
Paul. Hey, and Paul was a little passive aggressive, but
he was
snarky.
When he goes, I'm a positive person, and then you can't quite hear him, but off context, you can tell that Paul Gutierrez probably was like, that's not a positive thing to say, to say that you don't care about what other people say. That's not positive.
It reminds me of me right now, and allow me to explain. I'm reading a self-help book. It's called The Four Agreements by Don Miguel Ruiz. It was recommended by Stacey Dales of NFL Network. It was recommended by Tom Brady. A lot of people like this book. Whatever. It's kind of who moved my cheese, very 90s self-help. But I like it.
Gross.
It's simple, whatever.
It's like what Aaron Rodgers' girlfriend writes about.
Yeah, the witch.
On Instagram.
So there's one thing about how, like, you should repeat what you're trying to be, right? So there's four agreements. It's called The Four Agreements, as I said. And one of the agreements is don't take anything personally. So if you find yourself taking something personally, you should say, I don't take anything personally. Nothing is personal against me. Other people's issues are not my own. This reminds me, if I were to take something personally, like if Shawnee walked in and said, Vanessa, your hair looks terrible today. And I looked at you and I said, no, it doesn't. I spent 3 hours straightening it. I just got a perm the other day. But you know what, Sean? It doesn't matter because I don't take things personally. Nothing affects me. It's not personal. Nothing is personal. It's like you're talking yourself through what you want to be. And Derek Carr always strikes me as somebody that is like trying so hard to be positive and has recently watched a seminar and is like, I'm positive.
Yeah,
damn it.
He is very much like, I'm a positive guy. And then that's all he says.
He's not actually positive. I'm trying to dissect this. I did take psychology my freshman year of college at Syracuse University.
Freud?
Well, let's be honest here. His older brother is the first overall pick back in 2002. Is this maybe, you know, a byproduct of an inferiority complex of some sort or something like that? Is that what it comes down to? I mean,
yeah, I think being spoiled too.
Here's
just
the thing.
Just a little bit spoiled.
I would tell him this. Like, you've had a much better career than your brother. Like, not close. You know, your brother, yeah, was the first overall pick, but I think most people think that your brother could have worked a little bit harder when he was the starting quarterback of the Houston Texans, that he didn't take it as seriously as he needed to. And you have surpassed his career. I mean, I think Derek Carr has lapped it. So I'm really wondering where this sensitivity is coming from. I get it. Like, you're being constantly questioned all the time, but that's the way of football. You have still survived as starting quarterback of the Raiders for all of this time. At a certain point, you should just say, like, I'm here. Like, I don't care what any of these people say. And I know he's saying it publicly, but it feels like, Vanessa, like he's saying it for, like, reaffirmation to himself. He doesn't actually believe it.
Affirmation, like Derek Carr is following on Instagram, like the manifestation affirmations, where if you just say you're positive and if you just speak it into existence, as the kids say, and all the athletes say nowadays,
don't speak it into existence.
It will happen.
Everything is terrible. Just accept it.
He really, really, really doesn't help himself. And it pains me because I want to like Derek Carr because I think that they could be good, but he takes himself so seriously.
Derek Carr, life is suffering. We're all going to die.
Whoa.
So, I mean, you're a starting quarterback for a team that's got a lot of potential going into this year, and you finally got the wide receiver of your dreams. Whenever you have little small moments like this, you are forgetting how good you currently have it in this spot. You have a real opportunity this year. And guess what? Because of the quarterbacks that you're going to be playing against and because of the, I would imagine, tons of primetime games that the Raiders are in, you have a chance to shut everybody up. This is not how you do it. This is just going to continue people to say, oh, there he is, Derek Carr, being sensitive again.
You know how you do it? You say, Broncos country, let's ride.
No, don't. Don't.
All right, coming up on Vanessa and Gallant, the Astros lose. But we have a little bit of insight into the owner's expectations. We'll chat about that coming up next.
ESPN 97.5.